Good afternoon, everyone. I am Shelly Kino, and this is Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true. And I believe that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms into the butterfly. In the cocoon, then, it has to struggle to fight to get out of that in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. That can't be an easy task, but then neither is busting through those limits that society places upon a person. And today, I have a newly published best-selling author. I just got to tell her about the fact that she was a best-selling author. She didn't even claim it yet. Her book has been out for a week today, right? It released on April 5th.
Yep, yes. A week today.
Yes. So my guest today is Kate Swenson, and we will get to her in just one more second. I just want to remind anyone, if you are watching us live, to give us a hashtag live and tell us where you're watching from. If you're watching in the replay, to give us a hashtag replay. If you have any questions or comments, please put them into the chat and I will be able to share them with Kate. And I think that's all the business stuff. So Kate, welcome. And thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. So I found out about you through a friend of ours, Amanda DeLuca. Oh, and
we have a nonprofit together. So she is dear to my heart.
Yes. So I do want to talk about that at some point today. So tell us about you and like what brings you to this.
Yeah. So I am a mom of four and I live in Minnesota. My kids are 11, 9, 3, and 10 months old.
Oh, so my goodness.
Busy. Busy is the word. Nonstop chaos is another few words for you. I am a blogger, which is kind of how I started. And, you know, anyone can call themselves a blogger. That was definitely me. I just, you know, put some words out there. No one read them. And then moved into Facebook and had a lot of success over there sharing our world of autism. I used to call it our secret world of autism. Sometimes I still feel that way, I suppose. And just talked about different topics and showed the highs and the hards and all this, you know, talked about the different parts and had a lot of things go viral. And flash forward, I wrote a book, which I am so proud of. It still feels weird coming off my tongue. And I'm hoping it helps so many families that may feel lost.
Yeah. And I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing, but the few chapters that I have, I think it's absolutely going to help thousands of parents. Yay. And I really think too, your book, like my book, Those Who Can't Teach, is going to be a book that will benefit educators because they will be able to see inside the family. And as a former educator myself, that is such a key component that is often missed or not given the importance that it needs. And I don't think that that's anything intentional. I just think, you know, lives are the way they are and they're so busy, and teachers' lives, especially these last few years. I haven't taught the last few years. I can't imagine what it's like to be teaching the last couple of years. And so I really think books like yours and books like mine will help them have a better understanding of what it's like. Because sometimes there can be, and I think always actually, are tons of similarities, but there are some really big differences that are vitally important to understanding the dynamic of how that mom is thinking or how that dad or sibling is thinking. And so I'm really, really excited for your book to be out and I can't wait to finish it. So tell us about your blog first. Like, what is it called? How can people find it if they're interested in that?
Mm-hmm. So it's called Finding Cooper's Voice, which is, I remember picking that, thinking that was the coolest title ever. Now it's kind of funny because it really was never about finding Cooper's voice. It was about finding my own voice and figuring out who I was going to be in this. But I was a young mom and didn't know. And so I online at findingcoopersvoice.com, you can find out, like, there's lots of stories of our own, but lots of stories that I share from other families, because when you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. So yep. Autism in girls looks differently, autism in teens. So I share lots of stories, and I offer speaking things. A lot of education. So that's a really fun place, I think, to go and just learn and get to know our family. And then my Facebook page is really the day to day. So I just share what our life looks like and how it's normal to us. And we don't know any different.
Right. So I'm going to share your website. Oops. I got ahead of myself. I didn't want to share that yet. I didn't want to go to the foundation part yet. I just wanted to go to the website part. Yeah, there you are. Yeah. And
another picture, Amanda was there. Then. She hasn't made the family photos yet.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Cause when you said you had four, I was like, wait, I thought there was only three in the picture.
just a little baby.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. So, and there's where they can buy the book. And so, yeah, here's where you're, I think, kind of talking about some of the stories and different things. And so, yeah, guys, if you want to go, check out her website, findingcoopersvoice.com. And yeah, we will get into the foundation a little bit later on and take that back out. Okay. So, so I find that very interesting that you said, you know, you thought that was the greatest title ever, but you realized since starting the blog that, and the website, that it really wasn't Cooper's voice. It was your voice. Can you talk to that a little bit, please?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I think about what was the most confusing for me in the beginning, it was that Cooper was nonverbal or non-speaking, however you want to say. I mean, autism, I was like, okay. But I was like, you mean he might never talk to me? I mean, that just really baffled me. It was really, really confusing. And I really thought the end journey, the end, the final thing was we're going to get him talking. That's what our goal is. And you learn so much, you eat your words and never say never. And Cooper has made so much progress. He's so happy and he's healthy and he's living this full life, and he's still nonverbal, and that's just fine. And it was me who needed to change. It was me who needed to become the person after autism, our whole family too.
Right. Yeah. So I did go ahead and I will pull it up here in a little bit, but I did get your Facebook page, which I didn't have before. So I will cool. pop that up. And you say that in your book that Cooper was exactly who he was supposed to be. The person who needed to change was you. Mm-hmm. And I really love that statement, because in my experience, that's truly the case. It isn't the person that has the differing ability from our own that needs to change. It's us. Mm-hmm. And so talk about some of the dynamics of the things that you and your husband went through in finding yourselves within Cooper's world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just looking at the book before I popped on here, because I was looking for something to share. And I remember I stumbled upon this commercial. Like, it was like for an insurance company. And it was like, we're here for the only moments that truly matter in life. And it was like a kid hitting a home run. And then it was like someone walking across the stage of graduation, prom, driving a car, getting married, having babies. And I remember being really angry, because I was like, well, if those are the only moments that matter in life, because that's what we're telling people, where does my sweet boy fit in? And he right. matters just as much as anyone else in this world. And he may never do those things. But, you know, we were young parents and we had expectations and plans for our life. We were going to continue to travel, and we were going to camp and boat and do all these things. And we couldn't do a lot of them. A lot of the things shut off that we wanted to do, just they weren't safe for Cooper. Or he couldn't handle them, or so many reasons. And it was a lot of stress on our family for a lot of years. We still have it a little bit. Like, I don't sugarcoat things. It's, you know, we still split up a lot and take turns, but we're definitely figuring it out. And that can be a long, hard journey for families.
Yeah, absolutely. And Cooper is your oldest, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, being a first-time parent, I have only had one child, so I was only a first-time parent ever. I was never, you know, after that. So I know I had lots of concerns. I was finishing up my special education teaching degree when I was pregnant and when she was young. And so there were lots of questions that I had. And she ended up that she had a very minor speech delay. And she overcame that eventually and now never shuts up. And she's 22. So if she's watching, sorry, you know that I think that about you, but,
love mom.
Yeah. Love you. Love mom. but yeah. And so, I know some of these things are in the book, so I don't want you to tell what is everything in your book, but, if you can kind of speak to like, what sort of things, you know, you just talked about that, you know, you were planning on doing all these things after you got married and you had kids and some of those things didn't work out. So like, what sort of feelings did you have? What sort of was the moment, or maybe there wasn't a moment, where you were like, oh, this child is not the same as this child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, definitely. So Cooper, everyone's story is different, but Cooper was absolutely born autistic from the second I looked down at him. I didn't know the word yet. I wasn't in my language, but right away I could tell that he was a little bit confused about what to do with this world. Like he was like, eating was hard and sleeping was hard and relaxing as a newborn. I mean, my most recent baby for the first 2 weeks, she slept 23 hours a day. I mean, she was like,
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Out to the world. And, you know, all those things were hard for Cooper. But I was a first time mom. So I was met with a lot of like opposition, like calm down. He's just a colicky baby, calm down. Yeah. And, I remember calling my mom being like, he doesn't sleep. And she's like, yes, he does. And I was like, no, he doesn't. And he doesn't. But it really started coming out when I started joining in like other mommy and me groups and play groups and those sort of things. And you can line up kids in a row that are all the same age and, you know, one isn't like the other. And the differences are quiet at first because our kids are little and, you know, little meatballs, but then as they get bigger, they're not so secretive anymore. And it's very obvious. And for me, it was just such an evolution because I was saying we needed help, but no one was helping us. And we just lived in this in-between space. Is he autistic or is he not, for so long?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's very interesting that you talk about, you know, that you were asking for help. You felt it in your mom gut that there was something.
Yep.
And you were asking for that help. And yet there, you know, you as the parent he is your whole world. You know, yes. every one of your children are your whole world. And when we go into the schools, when we go into the medical professionals, they have thousands maybe of other people's children. And so they don't put the urgency.
Right.
That we do as parents for our own individual children. And I think we need to be that way as the parents. And so when you were going through that, like, what would you say to a parent right now who could be watching and is like, I just think whatever, but yet nobody agrees with me?
Keep pushing. Keep speaking up. Be the squeaky wheel. I just talked to a mom about this morning. I was like, a teacher or a therapist may have 50 or 100 kids that they're responsible for who are all equally important to them. So be polite, be kind, but definitely be the squeaky wheel and keep bringing things up. I went to my doctor dozens of times and I was met with late bloomer. He's a boy, relax, late talker. I just took it in my own hands and I made the appointment to be evaluated for autism myself, which was hard. It was a hard step to take. Yeah. Good thing I did it. But, and you have to also remember too, that doctors and teachers and therapists may not be seeing what you're seeing. You're with your kids 24 hours a day. They may be with them an hour or 4 hours or whatever. So keep pushing. And here's the thing, you could be wrong and that's just fine too, but you'll never regret trying to get help if it's needed.
Right. Yeah. And I totally agree with that. And I hope that as a former teacher that I listened to the parents of my students. I think I did. I know I had great rapport with all of the students' parents, but yeah, I mean, it is difficult. And as an education consultant now, I try to help parents understand from the school side of things that, when you as a parent come in and say to us, well, do this, do this, do this, do this. It's like if somebody comes to you in your parenting and says, do this, do this, do this, do this. It's not comfortable.
No.
You don't like it. You don't necessarily want to hear that advice.
Yeah.
But sometimes we still need to listen to those other voices. And I think as educators, we have to be very careful that we don't shut parents out completely and never take their suggestions. And as parents, I think we need to be more empathetic in our approach, mm-hmm. maybe, because I think the approach probably has a lot to do with how that suggestion is received. Has that been your experience at all?
Oh, yes. Kindness is yes, 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 yes. I had a teacher say to me, so Cooper did a 3K and 4K autism program, a lovely teacher. She's in my book. She's just a wonderful teacher and was so kind to us. And I remember her saying to me, I think teachers should get some sort of grief counseling or coaching on how to tell a parent that they think that they're seeing something. And because she's like, it's so hard. She's like, you know, we're met with anger, we're met with emotion, and we don't get any training on how to do that. And I can imagine that that's very hard.
Yeah, that's an excellent point because, you know, a lot of times, like in your situation, I think, you know, you were the advocate. And it was known to you before getting into the school system. But yes, there are those opposite situations where the school recognizes something and the parent doesn't. And so having those difficult conversations, but even in your situation where you knew going into the situation that, you know, going into the school environment that Cooper might need things to be done differently than somebody else, Did he have an IEP, an individualized education program?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Cooper's in a level 3 federal setting at our school district. So he's in a class with 5 other kiddos on the spectrum. Yes, definitely has an IEP. And he works a lot on, he is learning like some sight words and math and that sort of thing and doing very well. But he also works on other things like just sitting and listening and being involved and some of those other things that aren't necessarily educationally focused, but just as important for him.
Right. So when you go to those IEP meetings, and again, you came into the school environment knowing that he would need things differently. And you've said you've had a good team. So I hope that this is a positive answer that you'll give, but how have you felt when you've been in those meetings?
So I will tell you, like in the book, so we actually left kindergarten. We had a really hard, awful experience in kindergarten. It wasn't the right setting for him. And no one would just say that. So they were trying to make a square peg fit into a round hole. Mm-hmm. And I felt really alone and isolated. This was years ago. I was just like, where do I turn? What do I do? And taking that step off the path of typical education is really hard. I mean, it's like lonely. Yep. And school districts are big and scary and it's hard.
Right.
And we did private therapies for years and then things all changed in COVID. And I said, you know, originally we would never go back to the school district. Well, parenting has a way of making you eat your words. And we went back to 4th grade and it was the best thing ever. We have the best teacher. And I feel our IEP meetings now are phenomenal because our teacher loves Cooper and she shares all these positives and progress. And then at the end, I'll be like, well, it can't all be good. And she's like, oh yeah, you know, we have some of these things. And it's been such a shift from kindergarten, where in kindergarten, it was everything he couldn't do and how bad he was and how naughty right. he was. And so we have a great experience. And I think everyone should strive for that.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so thankful to hear that because it is not the norm. Mm-hmm. Even when I have had parents tell me that they do have a good team, they still talk about the fact that, and I'm happy to hear that you were the one to say, well, okay, can't all be good. There have to be some, you know, we're not here for no reason, you know?
Yep.
But I've had parents tell me that it's kind of a loss or a grief every time they go to an IEP meeting, but that might not be your case anymore.
Well, I'd compare it to once a year we have a social worker come to our home and we evaluate Cooper for his supports and his services. And it's what it essentially is. It's an hour long of listing all the things he cannot do and all of his struggles and all of his hardest days, which IEPs can be similar to that. And I always chuckle when I think, we would never do that to a neurotypical child. We'd never go to a conference and list 40 things they can't do. We would never do that. Right. So it's definitely different. And when I do my speaking about working with teachers and IEPs, it's let's remember that Cooper is a child and it's not clinical. I feel like so often when we get into the IEP world, it's very black and white and data driven. And I want to remember that he's a little boy too. So I think our teacher and I work really well together like that.
Yeah. So can you give us some other tips for how you make that relationship so collaborative and maybe even, I don't want you to give away that, you know, everything that you would speak about at a speaking engagement, but just to share a couple of things, because I know that there are too many parents that do not have that positive relationship with their team and they do struggle and they have anxiety before going into meetings because it is going to be contentious in a lot of situations.
Yeah. So the best thing that we do is we have a communication log that goes back and forth every single day. And you can put that in your IEP. And we do that for a few reasons. It's not like he went to the bathroom and had chicken nuggets for lunch. It's like today we celebrated Abby's birthday. So when Cooper's home, I can say, did you have a birthday party today? And he's like, yeah. And then it goes the other way too. So I want her and his peers to be able to bring up things that happened. Like, did you go to the zoo this weekend? So that communication log has been like just vital to our success. The other thing is, and my mind just went blank, and this is what happens when you have four kids. So when Cooper was in kindergarten, I would get so many negative reports. I mean, it was like, I got to the point where every time my phone rang, I would be like physically ill. I still have a little PTSD over it. So when I first met with Cooper's teacher, I asked her what her style was. I was like, are you going to call me over everything? And I was very joking and, you know,
right.
She was like, I don't have time for that. And I'm like, because I can't, if you told me every time he had a behavior. So we actually created a behavior plan, which was really well for us. And we've actually never had to use it. But if he has a behavior that lasts longer than a certain time, they'll call and they'll put me on the phone, like FaceTime with me to talk to Cooper. We've actually never had to do it. But it's hard for parents who are working full time or who are not there and they can't fix it. And it's so stressful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about your other kids. And then because they are just as important in your life as Cooper. So I want to make sure that we give them their due time. Yeah. So just give us a little bit of, I mean, you told us their ages earlier, but like kind of, you know, just give us the mom summary of each of your other three children.
Yep. Sawyer is 11. Sawyer's 9. And he is your typical rough and tough hockey player, baseball player, always wants to be going run kid. Definitely has a lot of big feelings. He's a sensitive little guy in the sense that, and I think that he's going to be an amazing advocate. I really, really, truly do. I see him just growing up fiercely protecting his siblings, which is something I think that, you know, he's learned from seeing. So that's so great. Yeah. Our 3-year-old is wild and feral. I mean, that is the best definition for him. He's incredibly smart, definitely going to be a creative type, and going to scare me a lot when he is a teenager. And yeah, he's wild and fun, but so fun, so fun. And then our baby girl is lovely. She's just, after having 3 boys, and she's definitely different, and she's very dainty and sweet. And it's been really fun to have that side of it too, because I thought we were only going to have three boys. So it's been a blessing.
And again, I have not made it all the way through your book. And so I apologize if any of my questions are things that you share about in the book, because I truly am not trying to get you to share all the stuff from the book. But
yeah.
So your pregnancy with Cooper was normal, right? I mean, there were no, because I do remember you talking about that either in the introduction or in the first chapter that, you know, once you have a child with a special need, you forever tell the birth story. And, you know, because you do, every time you have an evaluation or a reevaluation, it's what was the birth like? What was the pregnancy like? When were the milestones reached? Da, 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 da. And so if I recall, all of that was typical with Cooper. It was just when he was born, right?
Yep. So very typical pregnancy. Yep. Yep. Nothing, no concerns. And my joke about that is, once you have a child with special needs, you have to tell your birth story to like every stranger on the street, because it's like, actually my younger son was just evaluated for some reading help. And the form was like, talk about your child's birth. And I was like, no, it just felt so funny, but I was prepared for it because Cooper, I've done it for Cooper. But he did have a tough delivery. So he wasn't breathing and it was kind of hard to get him out. He was a big boy. Came to right away though. But that does matter. And you will get asked a lot about that. And you know, your modesty, it's like, let's just tell the story. Okay.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so when you found out when you were pregnant with your second one, and that's basically as far as I've gotten into the book, I just read that part. And you were scared. But you were not scared because you were thinking that there might be something different about the second baby. What were you scared of?
Yep. So Cooper was not diagnosed, and we just at that time thought he was a challenging little boy. So I was not in any way afraid of autism or afraid of anything like that. I was afraid of being enough for my two children. I worked full time and I loved my career. I was a project manager and I had a very busy, busy job. And that's how I really identified myself. But I was starting to have to miss work all the time for evaluations. And he was getting kicked out of daycare. And daycare is hard when you have a child with special needs and all these different things. And I spent a lot of my day like making phone calls and advocating. And, you know, so I was like, I can't fit another little human in here. I don't know how to do that. So I was very afraid.
Yeah. And if you don't mind, so first I just want to go over this comment from Robin. Robin's actually been a guest before. She's a speech language pathologist. And she says, wow, I've read her blog and watched videos of her son for years. She's so well respected in the community of autism for family members and therapists. Aww. And she's going to watch this tonight. So
cute baby.
Yeah. So talk about that. That's not been something that I've really talked about with any of my guests too much, is finding daycare for a child with special needs. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Oh, it's very, very challenging. I did an interview the other night with a daycare provider who's a friend of mine, and she was talking about how often they're the first ones that see signs of autism in children. And we had Cooper, and he never slept. So that was hard. That's hard on daycares, because I think so often, I mean, like, I always give daycare professionals, like, I'm like, you guys are awesome. You get all your kids on a schedule, you get them sleeping, you get them fed. Well, Cooper has never followed any schedule. I mean, sometimes he's up at 3 a.m. Sometimes he's in bed at 4 p.m. You never know from birth. So we had a really hard time. And eventually after age three, no one would take him anymore. He just, you know, he couldn't do it. He just couldn't do it. He needed one-to-one. So thankfully we were able to get a 3K program and then another autism program to line up. So we were able to keep working, and it went like that till he was five.
Okay. Do you mind explaining what 3K is? Because that's not a term that I'm familiar with in Southern Illinois.
Oh yeah. So we have, our schools in Minnesota, we have, preschool and then actual. So it's a 4K program and a 3K program. And if your child has special needs and they qualify, they get to go. So Cooper actually started in the school district at age three.
Oh, okay. So it's just, so what we would call like preschool or maybe even early intervention here. So it's just the K was throwing me off.
Oh, yep.
So, okay. Thank you for explaining that. And so sorry, I kind of skipped ahead. I had asked you the question about the births or the pregnancies of all your other children. And then you gave your second one. And then I didn't ask you about the third and fourth pregnancies that you had. Were you anxious in those pregnancies as well? Or was there, what was the feeling like then?
Yeah. So my husband and I, we definitely went through lots of discussions about having a third baby, just because Cooper's needs were so significant. And there were lots of feelings that went into that. We wanted a baby very much, and we'd love whatever baby we got, and undoubtedly. But if we had another child with special needs, would we be able to give the attention to three? What pressure would that put on our neurotypical son? We went through every angle. We just talked it to death. And then eventually we just went for it. And we had two more children, and obviously the best thing ever. So people ask me all the time. It's probably the most common question I get. Should we have more children? And I'm always like, I love babies. That's my answer.
Well, and I think that's interesting. And that just brings up the point that when you have a child with a special need, it changes how you look at the whole world.
Yeah. Yep. Every aspect, job, career, marriage, relationships, all of it. Yep.
Yeah. Because you now have to consider things differently than, you know, like I said, it's not that we didn't want more children. We just were never able to make it happen. And, but I never thought about, well, you know, if the second one comes along, what's that going to be like? You know, it was just, oh, let's have a second one.
Yep.
And that was as like much thought as we put into it. So I want people to understand that's one of the reasons for this show is for people to have a better understanding of what life is like and how it is very rewarding. It has challenges, but it is very rewarding. And to understand and to appreciate the differences between families, but also again, to appreciate those similarities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think sometimes we don't provide enough empathy when it comes to our interactions with the family members and most especially the child or the adult with the disability. And I keep switching back and forth from disability to special needs. And I hope that neither of those terms is offensive to you in any way. Nope. Okay. I know that there's some, you know, conversation in the community of what is the good term or a not good term. And I've heard them all. So just trying to, you know, be respectful in all areas. So, that's kind of the idea of the show. And so, what was the reason, or did you have multiple reasons for writing your book and doing your blog? And I mean, I kind of gather that they're probably the same as my mind for having this blog, this show.
Well, for me, I wanted to find other families like ours. We felt very isolated and very alone, because, you know, when we went to the park, there weren't other families who had kids with severe autism. There weren't, you know, we weren't doing things that other families could do. So it was really hard. And by putting our story out there, I was able to build a community of people just like ours. And then as my page got bigger and reached more, I created a supporter group, which was a small group. And it's a paid supporter group on Facebook. And that's actually how I met Amanda DeLuca and a lot of these moms, because we just wanted a safe space to come together and talk and ask questions. And now it's filled with teachers and therapists and grandparents. And it's a beautiful place, shame-free, judgment-free, wonderful. And then the book was just kind of the natural progression. It's like, how do we put all this in one place for someone to pick up and not feel so alone?
Yeah. And I what you just commented leads into another thing that I had written down, is that you talked about when you would go to the parks and to the play dates and to the birthday parties that, you know, you felt alone. And you say in the book that you weren't ever excluded, but you weren't necessarily included either. So can you talk about that and give, some suggestions or some tips to those people who think they're being inclusive because this person has attended their child's party, or they, you know, they are at the park with these people, and kind of talk about exactly what you're meaning there by you were never excluded, but you weren't necessarily included either.
Well, I think families like ours can do a lot more if we have just a few tiny modifications. It's not like we need big drastic things. And, you know, one of them that I always say whenever holidays come around is let us host. And that can really kerfuffle some feathers in families because, you know, Aunt Karen always does Thanksgiving. Well, then the Swensons can't come. And that's, you know, that can upset some people, and there's some hard conversations that have to happen, but you know, Cooper's not safe at other people's houses, and he can't relax there, and we can't relax. And so I always think if you can, you know, reach out to a family with special needs that you want to have, like, we have a really good group of friends now, and we always host in our front yard. Cooper's comfortable here, but if they host, we can only go for maybe a half an hour. And sometimes that is the way it has to be, but sometimes it doesn't. So to be inclusive is to really ask what works best for everyone. And we'll gladly share. And if it works, it works.
And so that's your biggest thing, I think, is that the other families ask rather than always making you have to say or offer the suggestion.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, some friendships have slipped away because of that, or some things, because we just can't, the thing is, we really just can't go. We just can't. And, we're so thankful when people want to know what works for us. It's really just a wonderful breath of fresh air.
Yeah. That's a really interesting point, because I'm thinking about interactions that I've had. I do have a couple of family members, one that I grew up with and one who, is now much younger than me. And I'm wondering, you know, how much, even though I've always thought I was inclusive, was I really inclusive, you know, mm-hmm. in that sense of, did I ask, you know, well, what's going to make this person and the family comfortable, and what's going to make it so that, you know, because we do love our family, you know, we do want to be with them, and the same, you know, for you, I'm sure that you want to be with your family, but you have to put Cooper's priorities first.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So let's just talk for a few minutes about him as the oldest sibling, and then how he and his siblings all interact with each other. You said your second, you can see, is going to be a great advocate for all of his siblings, not just for Cooper. But so just kind of talk about how they all interact. I mean, I know they can't interact much with the 10-month-old yet, but or she doesn't interact much with them. I should say it that way.
I would say their relationships are definitely a work in progress and definitely developing. For a lot of years, Cooper and Sawyer just lived very independent lives. They were like two ships in the night, because Cooper doesn't play typically, has no desire to. He does his own thing and he's happy that way. Sawyer's a, you know, rough, tough sports kid and video games, and so two very different people. Now that they're 11 and 9, they definitely interact more together, especially at night. They sleep in the same room. So all three of our boys share a same room by choice. And that's a really beautiful thing. Harbor, our three-year-old, he kind of forces people to play with him. So he has no problem wrestling with Cooper or getting up in his business. And I think that's the beautiful part about a sibling. And the baby is very much crawling all over him. And he's so funny. He's like, help. And I'm like, I'm coming, you know, she's like on his head. So I think that one of the best gifts that we ever gave our kids was the gift of each other. So I mean, Cooper has made an amazing impact on them, and they've made an amazing impact on him. So it goes both ways.
Awesome. And so you just did some sign language there, and so is Cooper verbal? Is he paraverbal? It doesn't sound like he's nonverbal, because he sounds like he has some words.
He's nonverbal on paper. So like if his diagnosis is still nonverbal, but he has like 20 or so words. I'm not sure if anyone else would understand them, but he has 20 or so words. He uses a speech device. He is very conversational with gestures and sounds, very animated, and not hard to understand, if that makes sense. He can definitely get his point across. So, which is great.
That's awesome. So did you say he has a communication device?
Yeah.
And, how much of an ordeal is that for you to, or was that for you to get through the school system or through your insurance, and talk about if how everybody is trained, because I presume he uses it at school.
Yep. So we worked with a company called Talk to Me Technologies, which is fantastic. They're out of Iowa and they helped us get it. So they worked with our insurance company and Medicaid, because it can be quite the battle to get a device, and modeled it with him, worked with our speech therapist, and he got it when he was 4. And I wouldn't say that he was really very interested in it till he was probably closer to 6. But we just really dove into it, where if we knew he wanted chicken nuggets, we had him press, "I want chicken nuggets." We made it very purposeful. And it opened up a lot for him, because he could tell us that he wanted a red sheet of paper, or that his head hurt. Or so it was a great, I am pro speech device, assistive technology, pro. Don't think it's going to limit your child. It's only going to open up more doors.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, because I have worked with families before that I have tried to help them understand how they are actually limiting their child by not allowing some sort of a communication device into their life, because it does. I mean, I think our kiddos have, and our adults too, have so much to say, but it just is, they need to have the right way for them to get it out. And communication devices absolutely can do that. So, I don't want to leave you, let you out of here without talking about your foundation. And I accidentally closed that tab out, so I apologize for that. So let's talk about the More Than project.
Yeah. So my friend Amanda and DeLuca and I launched it, probably about a year ago. We, I'll speak for myself. You know, when you live in the world of social media, it can get kind of, there's positives and there's negatives. And I really wanted to have a passion project where we just give back. That's what I wanted. I wanted to do good work. So we started off with More Than a Caregiver, where we recognize that these moms, they're giving so much of themselves, so selfless. And caregiving is different than parenting. And it can be hard to focus on their mental health. It can be hard to get counseling. So we have worked to offer free mental health counseling to caregivers. Then we moved to More Than a Sibling, because I have a big, big tender heart and or spot in my heart for siblings and how their lives differ, good and positive and sometimes harder. So we give sibling scholarships where they can do something just for them, like go to Disney or, you know, something like that.
Oh, that's amazing.
And our newest initiative is so fantastic. And I'm going to just share a picture, because it just kicked off. Let me see if I have a picture. So we are doing, it's on my Facebook page. Do you have my Facebook page there?
Oh, I do.
So we wanted to put sensory corners in classrooms. So we were approached by some therapists that said that they can't do good work because they don't have the resources they need in the schools. So we are like, well, how do we raise money? We got to raise money. So we found a company called the Spotlight. If you scroll down, found the Spotlight Project. And it is a woman right there. Right there. And she gives employment to adults with intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities. And that's real gainful employment. It's good work. They're working hard. And we designed a bracelet called the I Am More bracelet. And they put together 250 of those, and they are selling those on their website. Our first batch sold out. We're on batch number 2. And for each bracelet, we get $5, and we're going to take 100% of that money and give it to schools.
Oh, and those are beautiful bracelets. Are they all the same color?
Yep. That's one designed for us. And if you scroll down a little bit more, because there's just a really cool picture that I'll keep scrolling. I'll tell you when to stop. We were live last night. And right there, if you click on that one, you can see the young man on the whiteboard. Like, this is them actually doing their job and like learning how to do it. And it is just amazing that, that this is out in the world. And I hope Cooper has this when he's 18.
Yeah, this is absolutely fabulous. I may have to reach out to this organization and see if they would like to come on sometime, because this is absolutely busting through those limits.
Yeah. And I can do I can connect you to Rachel. And, we sold out 250. Now we ordered another 250, and we just, but then the second part of it's so fun too, because we're going to go in these classrooms and we're going to put sensory corners in. And it's like, we're going to help these kids. So it's a full circle of
awesome. That is so incredible. I was looking to see if there was something about it on here, but not something specific to the sensory rooms, right?
No, not yet. Nope.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing it. That is incredible. And I am so excited to hear about that sort of thing, because that's definitely more of what our world needs. And I'm sure that you know that the unemployment rate amongst people with disabilities is 2 or 3 times higher than the other unemployment rate. And so, you know, that's, and sensory rooms and everything that you're doing with your foundation is absolutely incredible. So that's amazing. I'm so glad that we had opportunity to talk about that, because I think that will be great. And hopefully, you know, some of my viewers might even be able to, I plan on purchasing some of those bracelets and sending them out as gifts to my guests, because I've always wondered, like, what can I do for my guests that, you know, I take your time, you know, however long, and yet I want to say thank you in a way that is meaningful. So this is absolutely very meaningful and something that I could most definitely get behind and support 100%. So Kate, I don't want to keep, I would love to keep you longer, but I know you have, you know, 4 children and all kind of, and a new released book and a million other things that you're doing. So, but before I let you go, I just want to give you one opportunity. You know, if there's something that you absolutely wanted to say today that you haven't had opportunity to say, or I didn't ask you a particular question that you wanted to talk about, now is that opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, I think this book is, you know, really for anybody. It's a lifeline for families. But I also think if you are working with people with disabilities, if you are interacting, this can really just give you a glimpse into life. And it's not a clinical book. It's not a diagnosis book. It's a very easy read. And I think this is how we move the needle from awareness to acceptance, is by reading these stories. So I'd be so honored if you grabbed a copy of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I have my copy. I just haven't had an opportunity to get through it all the way. And I so appreciate you being here today. Once again, I will pop up your website. So if anybody wants to check out your website, it is findingcoopersvoice.com. And then here is the Facebook page, facebook.com/findingcoopersvoice. Thank you. And they can purchase the book through your website, but they can also purchase it.
Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's out there everywhere, right? Yep. Awesome. So again, thank you so much for being here. Thank you to my audience members who participated. Robin, thank you for your comment. And I so hope that you all have a wonderful week and happy Easter. And we will see you next week.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.